We are in the home in Santa Barbara today of a Danish family, and they did not come together, and we are going to interview the lady of the house first. And would you please tell us your name and where you live now?
Well, I'm Edith Yule, and I live in Santa Barbara.
And what was your maiden name?
And my maiden name was Larsen.
And you are Danish, and where did you come from in Denmark?
And I came from Odense.
Would you tell us a little bit about where that is in Denmark?
Odense is the third largest, or the fourth largest. I don't know. It depends on Aalborg.
Yeah.
The third largest city in Denmark. And it's on the island of Fyn. And nobody knows where it is, so I always say I come from the town of Hans Christian Andersen. Then everybody knows.
You were educated in Denmark. Would
yes.
you tell us about that?
Well, I went to Frøkenbilder School in Odense. And when I graduated into the Mellem School, I went to St. Knuds Gymnasium. And I came here. I didn't become student, but I was destined for that because we came here before. I graduated. And I came to Santa Barbara, and I started working in the rich people's homes in Montecito. It was exciting. I met all sorts of interesting people, and I was treated always very, very lovely by these rich people, contrary to what many people think. They were considerate and polite and kind. I was very well paid. My parents had a different life because my father had become very badly afflicted with rheumatism and arthritis and wasn't able to work. So my mother had to work also. So between the three of us, we managed to eke out a living for many years. And in 39, I went to San Francisco. The war was just beginning, and it was impossible to make to do anything but housework in Santa Barbara. It's the only work at that time. It was just rich people. People lived off. So I went to San Francisco, and I worked for a friend, and I took a business course, and then I got a job at the Veterans Administration and worked for the Red Cross at the Veterans Administration when the soldiers had begun to come back from the beginning of the war. And this afflicted me so that I couldn't stand to think of living under these circumstances, knowing the fellows were fighting and so on. And meanwhile, I'd met Alex anyway, and he had gone to war and was in Africa. So I went into the Army. I had my training in Des Moines, Iowa, and I was in the Army 2.5 years, I think, until the war ended. And boy, I wouldn't miss those experiences for all the wives in China. They were fantastic. Again, you think you give, but really I received a lot more than I got out of that experience. And then Alex came home, and we were married. And I was going to be discharged. Alex already had been discharged in California. I'd gotten to Colorado Springs. I was at Camp Carson. And my discharge application was lost, so I couldn't get out. For 3 months, I stayed in Colorado Springs and couldn't get home. And Alex, newlyweds, you know. They hadn't even had a honeymoon. So finally, I got out and got home for Christmas. We were married in September. And we lived in San Francisco. And I worked for the Veterans Administration. No, for the Army then for 4 years until our daughter was born out of the Presidio.
What is her name?
Anna Louise. So she was born and I quit working and was a housewife. And then we moved down to Burlingame out of the city when our daughter was small. And then we moved down to Menlo Park after that because Alex worked in Palo Alto. And we lived in Menlo Park for 10 years. It was the best years of our life, I think. Fantastic. And then Alex got sick and we had to retire, and we moved to Santa Barbara, and here we are.
Now, did you speak any English before you came to this
country? I spoke better English when I came here than I do now.
What was the reason for that?
Because in Denmark you learn to speak many languages, or you're just a dead duck. You can't get a job. I spoke English and German. I had a knowledge of Latin And I had 1 year of Swedish, and that was the most difficult language of all to learn because it's so similar, but it's so difficult to speak, you know.
Now, in your memories, as you look back, do you remember your grandparents at all?
I only had one living grandmother, and she lived in Rukubing, Palangland. And she was a fantastic, strong-willed, beautiful woman who ran the farm that the family had owned for many, many generations. And my father was an only son, and he would help her, you know, off and on. But she had a bestuur, a manager, mm-hmm. who married my youngest aunt. And this man was not a very nice man, and he managed to forfeit the farm and everything else and left my aunt and so on and so forth.
What was the name of that farm?
That was Karlholm Gore, and it's right outside of Rukubing. Beautiful, right along the coast there between Sweden, between Svendborg and Rukubing. South Sea Islands, they call them.
Do you remember your grandmother telling you any stories that have stayed with you that you might consider sort of a folktale, either in medicines that she used or recipes that she used?
No, she wasn't that kind of a lady at all. She was not a very grandmotherly type. Oh, incidentally, the only soft and warm woman in that establishment was my father's old nurse. She had been a nurse to all the children, a governess sort of, and she was Gamlesina, they called her, and she was a loving old woman. My grandmother was not that kind of a woman.
Did
my father was fantastic. He would talk and talk. He's the one you should have talked to. He was a wonderful conversationalist and had a fabulous, valuable fund of memories. I mean, you remember that, Alex. Just, you could sit and listen to him. If I'd only listened, if I'd only written down things.
Or had the tape for
him. I had the tape.
Do you remember any of the things he told you?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Is it difficult for you to talk of him?
No.
Oh, right.
I loved him. He was a wonderful man.
Could you give us one or two stories?
He had gone to Hung Lampu School, and he had gone to Dalum Lampu School, and had a very fine education in agriculture, like the Danish young men of that day. That was a day when Denmark flourished with agriculture, as I don't think they do now, really. And he was, I think, a very intelligent man. Really, he loved people. He was too soft for his own good. He loaned money. Anybody could just come and give him a soft story, and he would handle whatever they needed and so on, which came to a bad ending. And he was very, very efficient. Whatever he touched, he said, whatever he touched before he was 50 turned to gold. After he was 50, it disappeared. And he had lovely big farms, and did very well. He managed to farm for my oldest aunt. He was the oldest, but one of his sisters became a young widow, Skrillengården by outside of Middelfart, beautiful place. And my father's family, of course, you owe everything to your family, you owe everything to your sister, she's a widow, and so on. So he left whatever he was doing and went and managed that farm for her for several years. And my mother was a young girl from Copenhagen whose parents had died very early, and she was sent to his sister. He had an unmarried sister who was there, too, who kept house for him to learn, to learn housekeeping in a big establishment. So she was 13 years younger than Dad, and then they were married. And Dad left there, and then they started out on their own. But I think I had fabulous parents. My mother was intelligent and bright and witty and very beautiful.
Can you give us anything like that about your mother?
Well, my mother kept house such as you wouldn't believe. At 20, she married my father and moved into a big home. She had 5 maids. And she handled everything just like a stick. It's amazing to think that they could do it. She had gone, you know, to Husalding School, and she had been to a couple of houses like my aunt's to learn how to be on pihu. She said, that's one thing you will never do. She said, they make you do what they can't get the hired girls to do. So you will never be a young girl in the house. That was one thing she learned. She came from outside of Copenhagen, and it's very interesting. She came from Søgård, which is now Søgård, Brønshøj. It's all suburbs of Copenhagen. The whole family encircled Copenhagen. They all had farms right around there. Hellerup, I used to go for my summer vacations and so on. There was an old aunt, my mother's lived there in Hellerup, for Hellerup Gore. And then all of Hellerup was, developed into a very nice district.
Villa Quartier.
Yeah, Villa Quartier. Oh, yes, it was an old aunt, my mother's aunt again. She had made cheese. She was a dairy person outside from, what the heck was that, where she came from? I forget. But anyway, it was another one of those farms.
Yeah.
And every week she drove into the royal castle and delivered her cheese. She was a cheese maker for the king. And she said to the king one day, I made a new cheese, and I would like to name it after you. And he said, that's very fine. He said, her name was Nielsen, Hannah Nielsen. But he said, I want caraway in it. So that is King Christian IX's cheese that you get today with a caraway in it.
Okay.
And you know, there's a Landbrugsmuseum outside of Copenhagen, and some of her machinery and so on is there. And I have met people here in this country who actually went there to learn to be a dairy maid. She was renowned over the whole country. So she was one of the family.
Now, you were talking about the old nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about her?
Did she have special medicines, maybe, that were sort
of...
No,
I can't remember. Well, she had all kinds of things, I suppose she did, when the children were sick. There were four children, but one died in my father's family, imagine, but I can't remember anything. Oh, I can remember one thing my dad did one time. One of the maids had a bullen finger, infected finger, and he went out and put some cloths around it and under a cow, and made the cow get up to do his business or her business in this cloth, and that was supposed to pull the infection out of the hand.
You are the second one who has told us of that.
Isn't that strange? So that they must have done that.
That must have been a common,
yeah.
A common thing.
Yeah.
Now, you came here when you were still a fairly young person.
Yeah.
Were you aware of the decision your folks were making?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. When they came
here? I remember the years. We were there a couple of years in Denmark, after Dad lost his money and so on. We had this beautiful villa in Riksminde. And the first thing we did, we cut, there's a two-story one, so they moved upstairs and rented the bottom out. And Dad went out to a friend of his who owned a farm out in Dalem to work, and eke a living, whichever way. Mother did beautiful lace work, Knipplinger. And as I say, everything she did was perfection. And she would teach that, and she sat up at nights and knipped and sold the tea cloths and whatever she made of it. Were very hard years, and I can sure remember the decisions, because being an only child, you see, you're right in the...
Yeah.
And it was hard.
What were some of the people's reaction in Denmark, your friend's reaction to you coming to the United States?
Oh, I can remember the girls in school. They thought it was the most exciting thing that could happen to anybody, and I just hated the very thought of it. I just felt bad. Oh, I am very bad at coming. It was no adventure at all. I didn't want to go. I wouldn't want to leave my home and my friends or anything.
Was there any family, aunts and uncles, who expressed any particular one way or the other about you leaving?
Yeah, my dad was the oldest, and he was much older than my mother's family, you see. So she had three brothers and a sister, and he had almost been a father figure in that family. And they would have helped him, I think. And in fact, they were going to help him to get established again. But Dad didn't want to take. He was a proud man. He wasn't going to be helped like that.
Did you have any preconceived notions of the United States?
Yeah, but it sure didn't turn out to be
that
way.
That was my next question.
No.
What were some of your preconceived notions?
Oh, I don't. I thought perhaps it was going to be a continuation of our life in Denmark, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It sure wasn't.
What year did you come here?
I don't like to tell you that.
Oh, that's
right. Begin to figure out how old I am.
No, that's
one thing I have kept secret.
Now, you are, we know you belong to the American Scandinavian Foundation. Are there any ways that you keep contact with Scandinavians in this area?
Oh, we have a few friends from, not really many, a couple of friends we knew before, from my parents' time.
Mm-hmm.
But really, no. We haven't been that... We've always had a few good Danish friends. you know, really good friends, like Alex, and when we lived up north, friends when he was young and came here, and so on. But we have not really stuck that much to the Danes or the Scandinavians.
Now, do you have traditions you have kept from Danish time?
Oh, yeah, I think our whole life is a Danish tradition. You know, whatever.
For example, in what way?
Oh, we'll take Christmas, for instance, and birthdays, and everything. And our daughter, I think, will bear that out, that she is words and foods and whatever else, you know.
Does your daughter speak English?
I mean, Danish. Well, she speaks. She speaks. She went to school in Denmark, you know, for a half a year.
Uh-huh.
She went over to Uppsala University for a half a year, and to University of Copenhagen another half a year. Oh, she speaks fairly good Danish.
Do you think she will want the new baby granddaughter?
Oh, yeah.
To speak.
Oh,
Danish?
I think she wants to carry on that tradition. She's very proud of that. I'm very interested.
You mentioned that you often had a Christmas celebration or some Danish things at Christmas. Would you specifically tell us some of the Danish things you do at Christmas?
Well, you know, you go around the tree singing, and you have Christmas under the, presents under the tree, and you make little kamahusa and yada and stuff like that, and hang around with goodies in. And Yeah, we always had dinners. That's when we got our friends together. In fact, we had a Jewish friend in San Francisco. We met them, and our daughter was born. We were in the hospital together, and we've kept associating with them for many years. We always had them come on Christmas Day, because that was the day we had. Christmas Eve was for the family, you know that. And then Christmas Day, we had our friends. And this Jewish family came, and he always said he was a Jew 360 or 53 days of the year, but this was one day when he was a Christian.
Do you have recipes from Denmark, or do you use mostly American cooking?
Well, I use mostly American cooking, but my mother, you know, you have your traditional risengrød, and I've cooked Danish a lot of ways. I think a lot of the Danish food is very good. Æbleflæsk is a cheap, good food nowadays. Fried bacon and applesauce when you can't afford anything else. And pumpernickel.
Oh, absolutely, pumpernickel. Are there any other Danish celebrations that you have in the home? Fastelavn?
Yeah, well, they have that up in Solvang. We haven't done much on that respect. I think Easter is something we've done, you know, Easter eggs and roast lamb or whatever.
Have you been to Denmark since you left?
Oh, yes, many, many times.
Can you give us something maybe to how Denmark has changed or not changed from the time you left?
Denmark has sure changed, like the rest of the world has. I'm not saying Denmark alone has changed, but I mean the world has changed. And the fine, lovely things are disappearing so fast, I think. It's sad, but I think so. But every once in a while you meet lovely Danish people in Denmark, too. I last time we were home, I was going to Odense for the last time. That was 4 years ago. I thought, well, I probably won't come back again. I want to go and be there alone. Alex went on to Colling to see his family. And we met a lovely family on the train, a man and a wife. And they invited me to come and stay with them overnight. You know, just people you meet on the train. It's unbelievable. Just lovely people.
This must be a Danish trait, because you have just done the very same thing yourself.
I don't know, but it made my heart feel good.
Yes.
But I think that the Danes have become more mercenary. They're not. They become, because they think, you know, we find gold in the streets in this country. This is something you never find in Denmark, people understanding that you have to work hard, much harder, I think, than they work. And we have worked hard, believe me, Alex and I both. And we didn't find any gold in the streets, they think. They would like you to be very, very generous, and you can't just meet their demands, because you just haven't got that kind of money.
Now, there's one thing we skipped a long time back here. We have been trying to get the particular type of transportation the immigrant came on. Do you remember the name of the boat?
I came on the Frøkenatne.
Frøkenatne,
yeah. And it was a long ship, and it was not particularly good for the sea, because it was supposed to be. No, we didn't come on Fred the Island. We came on United States. And the girls, one of my teachers asked, what ship are you going over on? And she nearly died when she heard me say this. You need the stats. But it was United States. That was a good ship. But Frederick the Eighth was a long, skinny ship, and it was very...
Did you go on Frederick the Eighth later on?
Yeah, later on I did. Yeah.
When you landed in the United States, would you tell us where you landed and then where you went from there?
Well, actually, we didn't land in the United States. We landed in Halifax. And my father wanted to see what Canada was like. And then we came down through Eastport, Idaho.
Then and you did not go through Ellis Island?
We did not. I didn't even come through New York, no. I didn't get through New York to New York until 10 years later, I think.
Now, how long did it take you to get your citizenship in the United States?
Well, I tell you, we didn't want our citizenship paper because we want to go back home. We weren't going to stay here. Mail high water, we weren't going to stay here. But of course, eventually we did. So I think I didn't get mine for 5 years.
More than that.
It took 7 years. Well, then it must have been 7 years. Yeah. But then I must have applied at the right time. Anyway,
did you have to take any special schooling for your citizenship? Yeah. You knew English, though, so you...
Oh, yeah. But I did, right here in Santa Barbara. In fact, the county clerk who gave me the citizenship papers just retired last year. Can you believe it?
Oh, dear. Uh-huh. That's lovely.
Did you have any feelings at the day that you got your citizenship papers? Any loss or gain?
Oh, no. By that time, I just gave up any allegiance to Denmark. I mean, this is where I lived, and this was where I was going to live, and whatever happened, this was my country.
What is your feeling toward Denmark today? It's citizenry, its social programs, and so forth.
Well, of course, I think they have a fantastic social program. I mean, I believe in taking care of old people and sick people and whatever. But I do think perhaps sometimes it is carried a little bit too far. I feel perhaps it does kill people's initiative to be secure from cradle to grave. However, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Because we must realize that their medicine... that program is fantastic, you know.
Now, I think we're coming to the end of the day. If you had to think of somebody listening to this tape 50 years from now, is there something you'd like to tell the person who's listening to
from
this tape?
From your Danish culture background.
Well, we were brought up, and I think that is 95% of the Danish people were brought up to be honest and decent. I really feel that way. Like my father said, it doesn't make any difference what work you do as long as it's honest work. Work. Don't be like we find a lot today, you know, if you can't find the kind of work you do, go on welfare and so on. I mean, you had pride. You just didn't let down that pride ever.
And you think it's valuable for the future?
I do. I think that is the only way we can, you know, have a really good world. And I do hope it'll come back again.
Thank you, Mrs.
Hewitt. No, you mentioned you were in the service. What was your rank?
Oh, I was a sergeant.
You were a sergeant.
Uh-huh.
And you were stationed in?
Well, I went to Des Moines, Iowa.
Yes.
And had my training there. And then because of my foreign background, they kept me there as an orientation expert, you know, for the new recruits coming in, because it was good to hear somebody who thought so much of the war effort and everything that from another country would join the woman's service. It was still the WAAC, you know, not the WAC as it was later on. And then I went down to Virginia, to Lexington, to go to a special services school. And then I asked to be transferred near to the coast. I didn't particularly care for the Midwest. But I had to stay within the service command. The Ninth Service Command, and Colorado was the furthest west. So I went to Colorado Springs. They had a hospital that was toward the end of the war at Camp Carson.
They really moved and you closer to the coast.
And that was as close I could get. I couldn't get out of the service command, you see.
Yes.
But I got as close to the coast as I could. And then Alex came home, and as I say,
did he outrank you?
Yeah, he was a staff sergeant.
Okay. Just wanted to make that clear before we stop.
He was.
was that?
That he was very concerned about that. That yeah, I better come home before you outrank me. I could have gone into officers' candidate school, but it would have taken 3 months training, and for what? I was doing exactly the same work I would have been doing then anyway, so this is what I did.
Thank you so much.